Oh, and I'm stuck on mist.
It's so good, isn't it? Where are you now?
Would be it. Where am I? I barely got anywhere on the island. I was like, I've done the first clue. I found his message.
I don't know what to do next.
I've read through all the books.
Those bits are all important, but later on.
I kind of thought that, and I thought there's still not enough information here for me to know anything. So I don't know if I'm missing a switch or not pressing something or that, but I'm just like, I'm going around the island several times trying to press everything, and it's not working. Then I found a new path, and it just brought me back to where I was anyway.
So. I hate you when that happens.
Right.
Let's do it.
3, 2, 1. Welcome, dear listeners, to Devon Dice, the podcast, 47. This episode is called The Second Coming, and it's brought to you by our sponsors, Meeple's Corner, and was recorded on the 23rd of April, 2018. On tonight's show, Joel will be showing off his big red meeple. Lewis gets lost on an island and the plains. Plus, we have all the news and Kickstarters from the board gaming industry. I'm your host, Joel Wright, and joining me tonight is...
Lewis! Hello, everyone. How are you doing?
Hey!
Whoop, 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 whoop. I'm just cheering myself here. That's pretty sad, isn't it?
And unfortunately, we're missing Sam. He sent me a message saying he was stripping his wife against the wall at home. Or stripping his wall.
I think it was stripping the wallpaper for his wife, but close enough.
If everyone knows, if they go right back to when we first started doing the podcast, I believe I used that joke again back when he moved into his house the first time.
Well, it's sometimes good to recycle, isn't it? You know, some of the best comedians just break out their best jokes over and over again.
I just thought that's just deja vu. Him sending me a message saying he's stripping the wallpaper, and I was like, oh, I remember telling that joke the first time. Cool, I'm going to use it again. Anyway, so yes, me and Lewis tonight, we got lots to go through. First up, we start with bookkeeping. Lots more videos have been up, I'm pretty sure. Lots more unboxings, a couple more reviews. Lewis needs to learn how to use a video camera.
I unfortunately film my unboxing in portrait mode on my phone, which means that while you can still watch it, it just means you've got some annoying banners at the side of the on the screen now, which Joel managed to sort of wangle together, which is much better than the black it was going to be.
So yeah, a lot of those. Michael from Thursday Night Gaming has written a review for Exploriana.
Yes,
and it's getting good praise. So go and check that out on our website or Board Game Geek. Links will be in the show notes. And finally, someone has opened a Twitter account.
Yes, I have. I'm now on Twitter. Yeah. So everyone, come and be my friend. Are you friends on Twitter? No. What are you on Twitter?
Followers. Like, followers. That's it.
Followers. Yes, because come and join me. I'm very lonely. I've pretty much I've only got about 20 followers, I think, at the moment. And I'm pretty sure most of those are funny people who are essentially strippers who think because I tweet about board games, I'm in desperate need of a woman by the looks of it.
I remember those days.
They stopped
calling after you ignore them for a while.
I've just been blanking them. But I mean, they've been getting a lot of great tweets about beer and board games. That's all I'm going to say.
I wish I could go back and just tweet them at them in tweets of random stuff. That would have been quite funny. Yeah. You wanted attention, you've now got it.
Yeah, exactly. And if anyone's interested, my name on Twitter, is it called your name?
That would help so people could follow you.
Yeah, my name on Twitter is @the_brewery_tour, and that's me.
Now, this was set up in 2016, I noticed. So,
It was, yes. So that was for a project where basically my brother's in law and I are massive fans of beer and breweries and ale. My brother-in-law now runs a massive beer festival in Swindon, in Wiltshire, and this is set up, and we regularly still do and did back then go on lots of brewery tours all the way around the country. I think we've been on 20 something now, and we're planning on setting up a website and rating all the brewery tours, but that never quite happened because that would involve one of us knowing how to set up a website.
Well, you know one now.
Yeah, yeah.
If he's not stripping his wife against the wall, you can ask.
Well, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you could set up my brewery website, my brewery tour website. But anyway, yes, that's the story of my name. So, but if you like beer as well, I do tweet about beer and board games. Those are my two big things. Yeah, and on that note, there's a new feature coming up a bit later in the show, talking about the perfect combination of beer and board game.
Nice. Just say, since the last podcast, I believe, we've had been talking to the listeners, and like some of them are close friends of ours, and they've been airing their concerns about a few things. So we've been listening, and we're going to make some changes to the podcast. To this podcast, as you said, Lewis is bringing in a new feature, so we're looking at trying to get some new features in, maybe jiggle it up a bit. And then also, the Unhinged will be on a different RSS feed, or another channel, whatever you like to call it, because some people complain that they didn't like that on the same feed. So we're still going to do Unhinged. You might just have to find it on a different channel somewhere. So it's just a shame, but hey, I can understand some people tune in for a certain thing, and they get a bit upset when it's slightly weird, two old guys talking about TV movies and how sad their lives are. So probably not what you want to tune into on the board gaming one. And
quite entertaining.
Some people find it entertaining, some people just find it boring. So yeah, we'll move that off. If you still want to tune in, as I said, I'll let you know the links later on. So that's about it, I think, on keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
Let's move on to what we've been playing. So I'm going to kick off. And I went to...
You want
to
show off. You say kick off, you mean show off.
Well, I'm not really proud of it. But yes, I'm going to kick off with the Meeple's Corner Gaming Day, hosted by our beloved sponsor, Meeple's Corner, and Christoph. It was held at Crediton Old Town Hall, and it was a great day, and lots of people turned up, of course. And I played lots of games. Two of them I'm going to highlight of them, and it's going to probably sound quite negative. I do apologise. It's not meant to be. I mean, I played Dinosaur Island. Great game. Love it. I played Kung Fu Zoo. Pick that up. That's a great game. What else did I play? That's great. Oh, Zombie Tsunami. That's actually all right. It's getting some love now. I think there's something else we played. Can't think of what it is now. But anyway, I'm going to get on with two games. I was roped into filling out the numbers on King Domino tournament that Chris was hosting. So he set up with Pegasus Spiel to host a King Domino tournament. And there was 11 people all signed up, and he needed a 12 to make a full three tables of four. And so I reluctantly said, okay, I'll do it. Now, I've already aired my thoughts on King Domino. I don't think it's a great game. It's really plain,
not that great.
Basic. And my opinions have still not changed after two more games of it. I went in, sat on a table, and it was quite funny. I sat on a table. I was like, great, I'm here to make the numbers up. Has everyone played this before? And they were like, yeah, we've all played. I said, great. Will someone please explain how to play it to me again? Because it's been a year and I've only played it once. They're like, what are you doing here? I said, making up numbers. And they're going, you're going to go and bloody win this, aren't you? I was like, I'm going to try not to. But now you've said that to me, I might try now a bit. So the first game, I came in second, just about. And I was like, all right, that's fine. And then I was off teaching someone else a game to play. And then Christoph pulled me over. He says, oh, you've made it into the final because you're the best second place winner. So you're in the final. Wonderful.
Another game
of this. Great. And then like Christoph had this big giant version of it. Still doesn't make the game good. But there was a big giant version of it.
It is giant though. So if something's giant, you know it's already good.
And we played it and I think I was fourth in turn order. And I think I stayed fourth or third throughout 80% of the game. So I technically did not have a pick really of what I wanted. Right?
Basically, you just got a default one every time.
Literally, it felt like that's all I can have. Okay, I will put it here. And it wasn't until the last three or two rounds I got into first pick. And even that, I didn't have much to pick from. And then I last turn, I think I hate drafted because I saw a guy with lots of black mines with lots of crowns in. And I just thought, well, I'm just going to take that one that's got the black mine square on it so he can add to it. And that's how I played. That's probably the strategic decision I made in that game. And it probably won me the game. No, it didn't. I think I won the game way before the end. I'm going to get my scores. I'm going to air my scores.
I don't know. Folks that have noticed, this has been quite a long story for a game. Like, oh, no, I didn't want to play. They made me play. Oh, yeah. And, oh, I just fell into it. Oh, God. And I just rocked up.
Right.
Oh, here's the scores.
Right,
I've written them all down.
Here's right. So I'm going to air this. The four people playing, the three other guys playing in this, Moe, he goes a Tuesday night game and he's quite a shark playing games. He loves his thinky games. So, okay. Ben, I don't really know who he is. I think I met him last time we went to a Meeple's Corner Day. He looked like a bit of a, like he knew what he's doing with games kind of thing.
You're really big.
And another guy
up,
called Chris. Now, I know this guy. He's like been...
I think he's the international... Isn't he the international King Domino champion? I thought he was the world champion.
He's not anymore. he is. He's national. Netrunner, Android Netrunner tournament player, one time or the Boom. Other, and he's Boom. Probably done Magic and lots of other card games. He is really good at these games, kind of thing.
He's big on the cards, not so big on the dominoes.
No, apparently not. So fourth place. I'm not going to say who's in fourth place. Fourth place, 34 points.
Yeah.
Third place, 39 points.
Yeah.
Second place, 56 points.
Yeah.
And I came in with 72 points.
Smashed it.
Without...
So what happens now? Do you go on like the world tour?
I hope not. I might just say that second place, you can just take it. I really can't be arsed with this. So, yeah.
Too busy making too much money out of all the games of Rising Sun you've been playing.
So I walked away with a massive, well, not massive, 10-inch high King Domino.
It was an official tournament, wasn't it? It was the official Pegasus Spiel tournament. So you're like the Southwest champion. You've got like a genuine title.
Well, I don't even need to turn up to the tournament. I'll probably still win it. So,
I reckon you go on the world tour, mate. That's it. We're gonna see late at night, King Dominoing it up, like, and Joel steps up. He's got the draw. He hasn't got anything to choose from. He takes the default. Oh, and he wins it. Yes, he wins it.
Yeah. Now people might ask, how did I score so many points? Because there was a new tournament rule. I don't know if this is included in the main rules. It might have changed. I don't know. But basically, if you complete a full grid 5x5, you get 10 extra points, and if your castle's in the center of that grid, it's another 15 points.
So that's how you smashed it.
Yeah, I mean, everyone aims for that. You try and do that sort of thing. There was a couple that didn't complete their grids because I screwed them out of tiles.
You hate drafted them.
Yeah. But so it was actually quite fun, and thanks to Chris for putting it on. But I actually did have fun, even though I'm quite feels like I'm downtrodden on it. It was actually good fun. The game's still rubbish, but
I know. I still can't believe how that won the Spiel des Jahres.
I know.
That's just an absolute joke. I think I can remember the list, and it was I can't remember. There was two. I was like, oh, it's gonna be one of those two.
And
yeah.
The...
Oh, what was that? El Dorado. Yeah, and I was like, oh, it's definitely going to be Magic Maze. Magic Maze is by far the best game there, but I think El Dorado's got a shout. Like, King Domino is rubbish. It's not going to be that one. And then they announced it. I was like, what? That is an absolute joke.
So, yes. And then, I think afterwards, I had the option to play Rising Sun, which I thought, well, I'm going to have to play this one day or another. I can't keep avoiding it forever. So I thought, all right. And this is a guy who got everything as well. He's Kickstarter backed the lot. So we had everything in our availability. And I can honestly say you would hate this. So this is the one that...
Rising Sun is the one that's come after...
Blood Rage.
What's it called? Blood Rage, isn't it? Yeah. That's the Cool Mini or Not. Yeah.
Kim Winnie Not.
The Japanese Land. Setting one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I can honestly say straight away, you will not like this.
Good.
Because those monsters will piss you off.
Yeah,
there were some ridiculously OP combos in that. Even I was just like, that's just ridiculous. How do we stop this? Oh, I can't.
Yeah. Somebody happened to draw the card before you, therefore you can't. Like, what? That's not a thing.
Possibly that is the way. So Rising Sun has said it's an area control game where you're fighting for honor and points. In what's it called? Imperial
feudal
Japan. That's it, feudal Japan. And so you've got lots of samurai and people walking around Japan. Plus, and all these monsters start coming out of giant Japanese legends and myths, kind of thing, come in and help. And the game's set over three rounds with seven action slots for people to take. And then in between, it's like 3-4-2 or something like that. Is that not right? It's 3-3-2. In between that is like kind of a worshipping phase. So it's basically on the player's turn, they grab four tiles or four bits of card. Depends what you got on retail or Kickstarter. And they will pick one of these tiles out of, and there's five orders. There's 10 tiles. So as the game goes on, you'll see all the tiles. Possibly. And you'll pick one of these tiles. You get to do the top. Everyone gets to do the top action, get a coin, put some troops on the board, buy a card or something like that. And then you and your ally will get to do the bottom action, an extra action, which is great if you've got an ally, because that means you get like two powers happening possibly in a round. You
is
get
the
extra.
Problem, Joel, that nobody wants to be your friend?
Yes. It felt like it. So, first round, and this is one thing I don't like about Rising Sun.
I don't like this game because nobody be my friend.
This is one thing I said about when it came onto Kickstarter that I didn't like was this forced negotiation alliance right at the beginning of the game. When you know nothing about the game and you know nothing about what really people can do, you're forced into making a negotiation. Now, the guy who runs it says, no one needs to be in alliance. You can all just go your separate ways. It doesn't really matter. But who's going to take up an opportunity to be with someone else where they're going to get extra benefits from it? Okay? But if you're playing in three or five players, there's always going to be someone left out. It's going to be me at Billy No Mates left in the corner.
Literally picked last in class.
And so I was like, okay, I'm going to jump in this straight away. And I turned to Guy, Tony, I think his name was. And I think it's been to Thursday. And
Is he?
Yeah, it came with Ian. And I said, Tony, me and you were quite close on the map here. How about we make a little alliance, eh? He's like, yeah, that could probably work. Okay, I was like, cool, that's an easy alliance to make. And suddenly, the guy that's game it is, and he's got all these alliance token tea plastic fancy chips that they're kind of like the yin-yang symbol if you put them together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yin and Yang symbol. So we have the alliances like this then, and he's put his together with Tony's, and he's put Ian's and Nick's together, and mine's off on its own. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, that looks like great. It's like, whoa. That wasn't the alliance I made. Why is mine pushed out to the side? Goes, well, everyone seems to be happy with that.
Because you didn't have plastic yin and yang tokens, mate.
I didn't have control of it. Apparently, whoever's game it is gets to control where the alliances go. I was like, and he goes, well, you could have offered like something in like exchange for his partnership. I said, well, I was about to offer him a coin because I've got 7 of them and he's got 4 of them, and I was about to offer him the coin. But no, if you're going to be like that, I'm going to speed and give you no mates and sit on the sidelines. Screw you then. All right? Not bitter at all. But it is damning because they're all kind of getting these extra bits, and he's like, I do my action. Oh,
you're just screwed, aren't you?
And I'll just do this on my own. And they said,
did it not work out that sort of like within a few turns, someone realised, well, like, if I keep helping the same person, but now Joel's behind, is it not better if I get alliance with them?
No, because we did kind of split it out. We did kind of like second, the next two rounds, I did get in with someone. There's no real benefit for being on your own. I saw.
Yeah.
They said, you can use the betrayal card.
Who are you going to betray?
Well, yeah. For one, okay, it gets me 2 extra troops on there, but that's not the idea of that card. That's the idea of someone saying, I'm going to stiff my partner in the back with this sharp knife. I'm going to betray him so I can get more troops on board. No, why would you want to do that? When you two can work together and say, let's do this and do that, we get this extra stuff going on. Why would you two want to betray each other? There's no real extra goal for it kind of thing, if you know what I mean.
There's nothing
to say.
I mean, I guess the point is they have to work out that as they carry on, you know, that person's helping them, they're also helping that person. So you've got to work out if you carry on just sticking with that, like if you're supporting the winner, then you need to be the person who needs to back out of that and go and join the Billy No Mates person who's lagging behind. Then hopefully they'll catch up and you'll catch up because you've always had a partnership. And I guess that's what people have got to spot. But that's quite hard to do with one play of a game, isn't it?
So the game progressed on quite well. And we were having fun, but it took a long time to play. And we were moving at quite a clip, even like there weren't a lot of hanging around. But there's just like this stuff, there's just so much going on. And then like warring, you get to every round, at the end of every round, there's a war stage. Now you could like pile your troops in. That could mean bugger all, because you might not walk away from that, the winner, because it all comes down to this kind of behind the screen bidding, where you can put all the coins down you might have onto these actions you want to do. And it starts off with Sabuku or something like that, which is where all your warriors drop on their swords kind of thing. They basically commit suicide. But that gets you honor if you do that. So you get extra points for doing that. Or you can take hostage.
That's a really good way to completely destroy Japanese culture and history there, isn't it? not quite accurate as to what happened.
Right. So you can take a hostage. You can do something else.
Add Ronin forces to the board.
And then the other one is like you score points for how many people die in the battle kind of thing. So once you've committed to Buku, you've taken a hostage and you've done something else. I really can't think what it is now. It'll come back to me in a minute. Then it goes actually into war and you're comparing strengths and things like that. Whoever's got the most strength wins the battle, everyone else dies. And then how many people die, if you put money on that kind of score points for people dying, then you get lots of points for that. And and that's it. But it's like, because of that thing, there's no way of guaranteeing you're going to come away with a victor of that battle. I know thing. It's really so random in a way. Do you know what I mean? It just felt I could not sit there and think, right, I've definitely won this.
No.
The only way you can think that is if you've got if you've got lots of money and they've got no money.
Yeah.
Because if they got no money, they can't put their coins on anything. So all they're doing is hoping to get through the battle to the strength and win that. Mm. But if they've got one coin, they could put it on the suicide bit, kill all their troops off straight away, get loads of points, and that's the war over kind of thing.
Yeah.
The only way to counteract that is either putting more money on there, hoping that they didn't do that, or hoping they did do that, and then you counter it because you don't have to do whatever you put your money on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you're trying to think what they might do and how they might play it and how much money they got. And if you're hiring honor and you draw a level of how much money's been put on there, then you outweigh them in honor kind of thing. So you win the tie. So the battling's quite good, but that could just take time and people just sit there going, oh, what should I do with this? And then also the winner. Losers lose all their money that they put on the board, but the winner has to dish out all the money they put on their board to the losers, which is quite clever, like that. So, battling is fine. I just thought it's just way too... It just didn't feel right. It didn't feel like it was a battle in the end. It just... As I said... They could walk in with all these troops and then just kill them in one fell swoop. And then just like, all right, didn't even need to bother turning up today, lads. Let's go back to the barracks.
I guess it's more of a kind of almost like a kind of advanced social deduction, kind of almost like rock, scissors, paper type kind of game, isn't it? Rather than a kind of true kind of area control type game, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah. So then what topped it off, really? I mean, the guy said whose game it was, said this was just a random coincidence that these two came out together. So along the top of the board, they've got these four tiles. These are kind of worshipping tiles. So if you put troops out on the board, you could put this priest type troop out. I really can't remember what their names are. And when you put them on the board, you can actually opt to put them on one of these tiles. So when it gets in between these stages, this praying stage, if you've got the most priests on that tile, or you've got your tie but you've got higher honor, you can take the power of that tile. So there was like make two movements, get two coins, go to the top of the honor track, and some I'll buy a card kind of thing. So they were out there, got to the last round. I went with Ian. I said, Ian, how about we go do this and do that? And he's like, yeah, that sounds fair enough. And we opted not to make any alliances with the guy who owned the game, because he was way out in the lead. He was on about 25 points, where the rest of us were down in like the teens, low teens. There was one guy, Tony, was on 1 point. Right? 1 point, okay?
Oh, bear that Tony. In mind.
Bear that in mind. He was on 1 point when he started the third round.
Yeah.
He, so I was with Ian. We had this kind of little plan going on. Tony went with Nick and we went off. So there was a bit of hiring of troops. I think there's buying first. So we could buy a card, which allows you to buy loads of these cards in a marketplace. They have the monsters on it. They have powers. They have ways of scoring. They do lots of things, kind of thing. Bit like Blood Rage, but instead of drafting, and you can see it all, then you can purchase and buy what you want. If you're an alliance and you pick that thing, you get actually a discount of one extra coin off of the price, which is not too bad. So I must have missed what Tony picked. He picked up this monster. I probably was off trying to kick the kids around a bit, keep them awake, tell them we will be going home soon. And then I came back and everyone's bought these cards. So then we went to the next bit, and it's putting guys out on the board, which you can put a guy out where you've got a stronghold. So it got to me and I thought, I'm going to put one on. I'm going to put a priest out on the two movement because I need some movement to get around the board. And then it got round to, I think, Ian done his movement. It was on Cameron's turn. I was like, oh, no, I really need to get this massive dragon out I've got that was killed in the last war. I should have put him out. Oh, what do I do? okay, can I change this? Can I put my dragon out? They're like, yeah, no worries. So I took off the priest, put my dragon out. That was my failing on that. And when it got round to Tony, he actually put out two priests and put it on the two movement. I was like, okay. One of my cards I had allowed me, once everyone had done the recruitment, I could put an extra person out on the board. So I opted to put a priest out on buying a card. So it's like that. And then it came to movement, and it came to worshipping that time. And like, Tony's like moving this new monster he's just brought, and he's moved it into a province. And when I realized, when he moved this monster into a province, he took 2 points off each enemy opponent in that area. And he got the 2 points from those opponents.
What?
Okay. Yeah. Not only that, Cameron pointed out to him that he could do two movements with this monster with that worshipping card. So he moved it back to where it was, where there was more points to gather. Right, so that's the first worshipping. There's two more worshipping after that. Plus there's marshalling, which allows more movement. So it got to the second movement, and he's done it again. And now you can see that we're losing lots of points, and he's slowly climbing this board, right? So yeah. By the second movement, he's up with us mainly, or surpassing us already on points. So then it gets to the last two turns of picking cards, and it's him to pick and Nick to pick. Two people in alliances picking cards. And they said, well, I believe there's two marshalling cards in there, so we could do extra movements around this. And Nick's like, yeah, I could work with that, really. I was like, looking at it, it's like, why would Nick want to give him extra movement when he's actually right down in the bottom of the track? And that's what they did. They went both marshalling. So Tony shot off in the lead. Nick's he's getting lower because he's actually losing points from Tony, but he's not at the bottom yet. And then it gets to worship again. And then Tony is literally nearly hit 25 points or something like that.
Mm.
Did it go higher? Oh, I think it went up to 50 on the back. So he's nearly up to 50 points and he's left us right behind. And we still got warring to happen.
All because this is one monster.
And yeah, literally, because it's one monster, I think in the end, the score was... let's get back. Go away. Rising Sun. Tony ended on 80 points. So he started the third round with 1 point.
And how many rounds are there?
3 rounds.
Oh, so the final round. The final round.
He started the final round with 1 point. And in that final round, he got 79 points.
That seems ridiculous.
I came second, which is a great achievement, because I went into the purchasing lots of cards that scored me points at the end of the game.
Yeah.
And I was like, I said to Nick, why did you help him so much at the end? It wouldn't benefit you. He goes, well, it did benefit me because I didn't come last. Yeah. I was like, so you kingmaked...
Yeah.
Just so you can come last. I was just like, And then kept, like the guys who own the game goes, oh, that those two cards together, that's just a happy coincidence, kind of. Happy for Tony, not happy for us. So, yeah.
That was the kind of game that would have infuriated me.
So I actually came away from that. I said to Cameron, unlike Lewis, if he doesn't like something, it literally rip it apart. But I was correct. Nice and polite, and I said, I'm glad I didn't back it. It's not the game for me.
That's equally cutting, just...
No, he understood. I said, I'm glad I'm cutting back. I probably would play it again.
Yeah.
And if something like that happened again...
And if you see that monster, just get it.
Well, yeah.
Insta win.
Well, it apparently those two cards, happy coincidence, movement.
Yeah. How many more are there? Like,
well, that's it. If there's another combination like that, it's just like,
You just wasted, an hour of your life because on the final round someone happened to get this ridiculous combination. Games like that which annoy me. Actions that are only available to one person just annoys me.
But there's, like I said, there was nothing the three of us could do about the last part of it.
Could you not kill the monster?
No, because the war doesn't happen until the end of the round.
Okay, right, yeah.
That's the thing. And plus, when they're the last two picking the last command card, and you're just sat there helpless. You're like, there is nothing we can do about this.
Yeah.
So that's where another thing was, the alliances are just shit.
Yeah,
what?
The whole thing sounds a bit questionable, because I really liked Blood Rage, your Blood Rage, and I was like, well, it's about the only game in the world I'll play where somebody can get some sort of superpower card over somebody else. It does still annoy me every now and again. We've talked about that before, but I quite like it as a whole as a game. It's quite clever. But I remember looking at the Kickstarter for Rising Sun and thinking it just seems a bit funny.
But at least it doesn't last for 3.5 hours, and then
like. Rising Sun lasted 3.5 hours?
Yes.
3.5 hours?
Yes. And we were going at a good clip because we knew we were running out of time. That could have gone on longer if people sat there and thought about it more. But because we knew we were running out of time, we were like, right, we need to pick this up. Come on, let's keep going kind of thing.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, maybe we could have looked at it and said, oh, he's got that monster. Right, we need to stop him getting this movement card. If we had known that... Like, we could have sat there and kind of diverged everyone's cards and what they can do and where it might help, and we might have been able to stop that.
It's you have to know every card in the game, then, don't you? And it's just.
Well, yeah. You need to worry about the ones that are out in the game, like the tiles that come out the top. They're the only four that stay there for the rest of the game. Each new round, a new set of cards come out, and they're kind of like they're like Blood Rage cards, where they're set for different ages, kind of thing. So it could be it's a randomization with that, but
yeah. Well, I guess I think I'll have to play it at some point. I'm sure, but what you're saying, it sounds like it's going to make me very angry. But I'll go into it knowing I'm going to be very angry. Although I'm not prepared. I'm not sure. I'm quite happy to spend 3.5 hours playing it.
No. Maybe it'd be shorter with less players, but I don't know if it'd be the same.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens. If it comes up, I'm not going to hunt it down, but if it pops up, I'll have a game.
I was going to say, but I think this is the problem where, like, call me not, and they've done it with Blood Rage. I mean, you're happily sit there and say some of it's broken with these extra monsters they put in it. I think that some of them are great. If you know what they do, then you know what's going to happen throughout the game. Some of these monsters, I think they were just putting in. It's like, right, what ability they're going to have? Oh, he's going to take off 2 points from each opponent, and they're all going to gain it. Done. That's sorted. Right, what next
really,
monster?
Really annoying. Like,
what about playtesting? No, we ain't got time to playtest. We need to get this out, kind of thing.
We don't need to playtest. They're cool mini or not. We just make those of minis.
Yeah. As long as they look good and giant.
Yeah.
They are. Some of these are massive. There's a whole. One of these monsters could do enough miniature monsters for, like, Memoir 44 or something like that. They're so big.
Melt it down.
It could have done. It's so big and unnecessary kind of thing. But...
So you weren't a big fan.
And the other thing is, you could never... Once you played a Kickstarter version, you could never go and play a retail copy. Because all the Kickstarter version is, like, splendid. It's got, like... 3D miniatures of everything, where the retail version is just going to be cardboard tokens. You're going to get the miniatures for the clans and the monsters you're getting it, but everything else, like the strongholds, which are the bases that you populate troops from, they'll just be cardboard tokens in retail, where the Kickstarter versions are nice little Japanese traditional houses with the funny roofs, whatever you call them.
Funny ruse, yeah. You were being nice and PC up until that moment.
I can't really go and get a retail version now. It's going to look crap compared to that, and especially with the map. You get this massive map. It looks like a rug on the Kickstarter. He rolled it out on the table. I was like, blimey, I can have this on my lounge. Put a coffee table on it. It'd be lovely. Move the coffee table off and play a bit of Rising Sun while we're waiting for EastEnders to start.
Why not? Why not?
Could do some can do other things on the rug, but won't go into that. Family show. Anyway,
I can see that's had a, it's, this game has had a big effect on you, Joel. It's been...
do you know what? I feel so good now.
Not just that, you haven't mentioned that to me at all. So you must have been saving that up completely.
I think I was telling. We got a new Sam that's joined Thursday night. I think I was telling new Sam about it, and you were off buying beer and food, I think. So, yeah, but I didn't get through it all. So I'm going to sit back. I'm going to now chill and drink my beer while Lewis is going to tell you
about what I've been playing. I'll start off with we obviously very much like Orleans. We played that at our Thursday group. I think Ian brought it up from the Plymouth group. And so we are obviously big fans of Orleans. Ian brought it up from the Plymouth group for us to play on our Thursday group in Ivy Bridge. And we all loved it, and I instantly went out and bought it. And then we remembered that way back when we were at Essen last year, you had, of course, you had picked up Altiplano, which is the second game from the same designer, whose name has completely escaped my head.
Oh, Joel, help me out. Me. I wouldn't be able to even say it if I tried, probably.
Where is it? Oh yeah, so which is the second game by Rainer Stockhausen. It's actually a second ever game, but certainly it's the second one in this sort of series with the drawing from the bag kind of mechanic. And this one is set. It's Altiplano, so it's set in the Andes, and it's got lots of llamas and lots of materials and tons and tons and tons of chips. And it's got so for people who aren't familiar with Orleans, it's essentially a game where you collect resources, and those resources are in the form of sort of different workers that you then put in your bag, and each round you can draw out a certain number of workers, and you can allocate them how you like onto your board, and with different combinations that are printed on your board, if you can fill up all the little gaps with the correct workers, you can then do that action, and that'll give you normally more worker, so another kind of worker, and then an action that normally sort of in some way boosts your points. And it's really good fun, really, really good game, really clever, really well thought out. Altiplano uses the same sort of idea. You kind of buy these different resources. They go into your bag. Then you can draw out a certain number a turn, and then you put them in the action spaces on your board. The thing about Altiplano that I really quite liked was whereas Orleans was slightly abstract in that you can do your action kind of whenever on your turn, whereas Altiplano you have to sort of plan your move a little bit better, because I think there are seven different areas, and you have to you have a playing piece that has to physically be on the correct location. So you know, if you want to make fish into food, for example, you've got to be down at the harbour. Or if you want to chop down some trees to get some wood, then you've got to be in the forest. And it's quite clever because moving between locations will cost you sort of resources as well. So that's it's a kind of really nice and clever little addition to it. There's significantly more resources available in Altiplano, which is good and bad. It's good in the fact that, you know, it gives you more variety, more paths that you can kind of go down, and you know, and only certain things, and you can use your actions to turn some to get extra to turn some things into other things. Well, I technically don't turn them into it, because you still keep the original thing and just get one of the new thing to add to your bag. And you know, so you can use your cocoa beans to to make some water or something. The thing I didn't like about it was, the interesting thing about Orleans was you kind of needed to plan your bag really, really carefully, because if you wanted to do certain actions, you needed to kind of, you'd say you need like a, I need a red man and a yellow man, and I wouldn't be a yellow man because the yellow man's wild, but a red man and a black man and a white man to do this particular action. And that's one I'm going to have to do quite a lot of. I better get a lot of red guys and probably a lot of white guys and probably a lot of black guys to make sure that I'm going to be pulling them out each turn. So you kind of feel like you're kind of playing the odds with your bag when you're trying to design what you want to be in your bag. Whereas with Altiplano, there was a ton of actions that you could do with just a single resource. So I think it lost a lot of the beauty of the whole bag drawing. I didn't even feel like it necessarily needed that. And if anything, it was just annoying if there was something you really wanted, knew you had lots of, and didn't get it, because everything still does something. It just kind of felt like you were way more kind of subject to luck. For some reason, for me, it felt like with Altiplano compared to Orleans. But having said that, I think it was really good fun. It was a close game. I completely stacked it with two foolish errors towards the end of the game, which I won't bore you too much with, but basically Sam and Mike stole my blankets is what happened.
Aww. Yeah, can you not sleep without your blanket?
It cost me over 20 points for the end game scoring, and it was just so frustrating because once it was done, it was done. And the worst thing about it was it wasn't even like I was trapped by turn order. I was first, and if I'd seen it, I could have just done it. But I was like, oh, well, I'm here now, so I'll just do this other action here first before I move off. No one else can get all the blank. Oh, no, wait, Sam's got two. Oh, no. Oh, no. Now Mike's going next, and he's going to get the last one. Brilliant.
Anyway, the game's asterisked anyway, because Michael cheated at the beginning.
Mike did not. So with Orleans, you basically put all your used workers straight back into your bag, and only workers you've got sort of saved up for the future in action spots that haven't been used stay on the board, and everything else goes back into your bag that you draw out of. In Altiplano, they all go into a little pot until your bag is empty, and then you empty the pot back into the bag. So basically, it means you have to go through every token before you. Before you can sort of get back around to the other ones you wanted. And Mike didn't realize this. So Mike was just refreshing his bag right at the beginning when obviously you've got a lot less counters. So he was just happily drawing away the two bits of wood that he needed to get these boat cards, which are really, really powerful, especially early on for getting extra resources. And he was just happily just getting them his two tokens every single round, going, oh, another boat, oh, another boat. And we were there going, how is he drawing so much wood? And then it turned out about five turns later, he's like, oh, you're only supposed to put it back in your bag if your bag's empty. Oops. So that was a bit of a, because he was used to playing Orleans. So that was a bit of an error on his part. So asterisk. Sorry, Mike, we're taking away your win. No, it's harsh. He did very well. He had a million boats and a million. These other things is boats essentially give you resources, and then you can build houses as well, which give you points, extra points in the game. And he had a ton of both. So that was Altiplano. I want to play it again. I think it'll be better on the next play.
Yeah,
it's one of those games. It was really, really heavy. It was much harder to picture what you needed to do than in Orleans, certainly for me it was. I couldn't work out what was good and what was bad myself. But there you go. And then the other game that I've been playing at the moment is my copy of Seventh Continent. My wife and I have set off on our adventure, and it felt like it was going really well. I felt like we'd worked out what was happening. I'd solved a couple of puzzles, was feeling smug. We managed to get off Newbie Island, as everyone calls it, and I had a clue which I thought looked like a map, and I was like, okay, we've got a map, so now we just need to go that way. And we went that way, and there was nothing else that was on the map. And now we're just wandering aimlessly round through a thick jungle, burning through our cards, no idea where we're going.
Oh dear.
Yeah, oh dear. But I did single-handedly kill a bear, so who's the real winner?
With your bare hands?
No, it was not with the bare hands, obviously. I had a weapon, but I did it on my own. You can't do it with your bare hands, mate. That'd be impossible.
I got to the point.
If you ever come across a bear, you will understand what a big feat that was.
Okay. He's probably got big feet as well.
Yeah, a massive feet he did, honestly.
I got.
You should have been there, man.
Nice. I got to a point where I can get off the island, and then I packed it away because I just want to get the rules down so I can play it with the missus, but just hadn't had a chance.
It's really, really good fun. I like it. So it's not like a board game in the traditional sense. My wife and I feel it's more like a kind of story that we're kind of going through together that we can kind of interact with. That's kind of, you know, how we're getting. Like, there are lots of, you know, quote decisions to make, but really you're just kind of, you turn over a card and you're just seeing what stuff you can do, and then saying, should we go this way? Like, yeah, okay, we don't know any difference. So I think as we play it more, we should get sort of more familiar with the island, and we'll know the tricks and things, so we'll know to avoid certain bits and head off in certain areas. But I think certainly sort of the whole first newbie island bit, one of the things it reminded me so much of was the 90s, early 90s Mac game Myst. Did you ever play Myst?
No, I haven't played Myst.
No, it's kind of like one of those point and click adventures. You know, it's a bit like Escape from Monkey Island was the other one. Oh, and there was another one with, like, what's the one with...
I remember playing one.
Prince? Yeah, there's one with, like, a prince. And then there's a maze. Oh, and there's seven dwarves in it as well at one point. Oh, what is that one?
The one I used to play is going right back. This is going back to PlayStation 1 era.
Okay.
And it was the...
Well, this is all pre-PlayStation 1.
I know. This is going back to PlayStation 1, and it was Discworld.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Did you play that one?
I didn't. No. But it's that similar sort of thing.
Yeah. So you click around, you're trying to find something to get into the next puzzle.
And it really, really reminded me of Myst, where basically you seem to spend so much of your time wandering around, going, "Well, I've looked at bloody everything. I've looked at bloody everything. Where could something possibly be? I've looked bloody." Oh, what about doing that and then that? and then you suddenly work out a puzzle and you feel so smug, and then you spend the next half an hour to an hour doing what you've worked out you need to do, and then you do it, and then you're in a new area and suddenly there's a new puzzle, but you don't even know what the puzzle is yet.
I mean, that sounds very similar to the exit games. So, like, you get an exit game and you just open up the box and the game says, right, play. And it's like, but what do I do? I've got a deck of cards and I've got a deck of cards.
Yeah.
What do I do? Oh, I know, a book. Yeah. Oh, I'll flick through. Oh, there's a clue in the book. Right, where's that card kind of thing? And it's just kind of like, and you're kind of pulling at the threads a bit of a warm blanket.
Michael, well, there's so many times.
You earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Bloody Michael. There were so many times when I was when we were playing, and my wife just said to me, she's like, "Oh, so how do we do this?" And then I was like, "What? Well, I don't know." And she's like, "Have you read the rules?" Say, like, "Yes, I've read the rules. It's not in the rule book. Presumably, it just tells us at some point."
Yeah, Claire said exactly the same thing when I sat down with her exit game with her. She was like, "What are we doing?" I said, "I don't know. I don't know. Just look through the book." I was kind of like pulling my punches with it. I was just saying, like, "There's a book. Just look through it. See if it's kind of..." Because I played so many, I just kind of knew. And she was like, "But what are we meant to be doing?" I said, "There's a puzzle somewhere. Find the puzzle."
Somewhere there's a puzzle. Yeah.
She's like, "I just don't get it. Why are we playing this stupid game?"
That's kind of a bit like what my wife's reaction to Seventh Continent, but
kind
of
enjoying it.
Sorry?
Is she enjoying it?
I think so. She doesn't seem to be. She's certainly not been into it as much as sort of Mex vs. Minions, when we had that great epic campaign of Mex vs. Minions just before our first was born. That was really good. We really enjoyed that. We're both really into that. But I think she is enjoying it mostly. I think she probably needs a bit more time to warm to it. I think there's a bit too much of her not really knowing what she's doing, and so she thinks that I'm kind of dominating everything. Yeah. But it's like, no, I'm literally not, because she thinks I'm like holding information back from her or something. It's like,
what have you got up your sleeve, Lewis?
Yeah. Nothing. Literally, if I go, exactly. When I'm going, should we go and see what's over there? And she's like, I'm literally just, that's my guess is as good as yours. And she's like, oh, what's over there? What do you know? It's like, no, I don't know anything. I don't know. That's one of the options. I mean, we can go the other way if you want. It's all equally lost to me. Like,
yeah, been there. Hello, you gone?
No, I'm here. Yeah.
All right. So I thought you just went completely silent. I thought you're gone.
All right. Yeah, no.
So yeah. Wow. That it then?
Yeah. Well, I guess we just have to see what happens. I'm limited by what I can reveal. So I don't want to ruin it for anyone. So I don't want to say too much. I'm already worried the bear is too much, but I think it's important people know I took down a bear single-handedly. Mm. I mean, I think that's an important fact that people need to know about me.
I mean, it's clever. The system is really
very clever. So clever. And you don't realize how clever it is until again, it's like mist. You don't realize how clever it is until you do it.
Yeah.
Like, how did someone come up with that? That's so clever.
Mm.
And then a lot of time you look back, you're like, oh, there were so many more clues that meant I didn't have to find this by accident. But well, now I get it.
You fail something, it's just like, I really didn't need that to fail.
Or most of the time, or sometimes you do something, you fail it, and then a little while later you realise, I didn't even need to do that thing, let alone bloody fail it.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but I killed a bear.
You killed a bear, that's what counts.
Yeah.
I couldn't even catch bugs coming out of the ground, so that's how good I was.
You had bugs coming out of the ground?
Yeah.
Gosh, we didn't have bugs coming out of the ground.
Ah, see? It's different for everyone. You're doing the starting scenario, I take it.
Yeah, well, it's called Voracious Goddess.
Yes, it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's the curse we're doing. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we've taken a wrong turn because we're just wandering through jungle and there's just nothing there. There's not anything to do about it, just keep exploring. And every time we explore, it hurts us more and takes away our cards. It's like a really tough move as well. It's like two for every move or something.
Really?
So we're just trekking through this jungle. Like, oh, God.
Two to pass it or just draw two cards?
Two to move from one location to the next.
Yeah, but do you need like two to succeed? Or
No. Just draw two cards. But,
right. Okay.
But as you keep going, it just drains your deck.
Yeah,
like, two every time. I mean, at one point, I don't know if I keep talking about ruining it, but you know,
Awesome.
Yeah. It's just we have no idea what we're doing, which is quite fun in a way. Although I think my wife finds it disconcerting.
I hope she warms to it more. Maybe you need to fail one and then you like
exactly. I think once we fail one, the next time round she'll know more what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't think we're gonna ever end up where we are again because we'll know it's the wrong way.
Yeah. well that's the thing, isn't it?
It might turn out that it's the right way.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like a choose your own adventure book at the end of the day. You finger on all the pages that you've been to and it's like, right, that was a wrong move. Let's go back a few chapters where I last left off and go a different way kind of thing. And you kind of do that again. You're starting a curse again. It's like, well, no point going that way. Let's go.
Yeah. We did not go well that way last time. Shall we go somewhere else?
Oh, I know this. Let's do this better.
Yeah. Still feel yeah.
But...
Yeah, so time will tell. I'm interested to see how interested I'll be to do it again once I've been like, just died. Because I always had problems with things like, Sonic the Hedgehog. Do you remember Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yeah.
And it was like how far you could get with one with your lives. And then when your lives were gone, even if you're on level 10, it's like, oh, you're back to the beginning. No! I don't want to do the same freaking thing every bloody time.
That was annoying.
Yeah, I just want to take it back to the level I was stuck on, because especially if you got stuck on like one little bit.
Yeah,
because then you keep, you, it's been like an hour getting there again, and then you do it and you die again. It's like, no. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how I find Seventh Continent for that, from that point of view. But well, yeah, time will tell.
Awesome. So what's the perfect partners then?
Yes, so this is our new feature. I feel like it needs like a little ding ding ding. Like, can you get me a theme tune or something? Like a little jingle. Perfect partners or something. Do 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 do. Yeah, don't take that one though. Get a proper one. and so this is our new feature. And I thought as I said at the beginning, my two big hobbies are board games and beer. So I thought what I could do is kind of combine the two of them, which is where we'll sort of take a board game and I'll try and find a beer that I think best sort of fits it, for lots of reasons. Could it be taste, appearance, to do with the, when I say taste, the kind of flavour, the colour of the beer, the marketing of the beer. And it's a bit like, you know, when you're watching those foodie programmes and they like to pair it with a good wine. Well, I'm going to start pairing board games with a good beer. And my first choice game that I'm going to pair up with our very first perfect partners is the game Photosynthesis. So this is the kind of slightly abstract puzzle game where you are a species of tree, and you have the board out in front of you on the table, and it starts off completely flat and basically a bit void and looking a bit boring, but everybody is a species of tree and they have lots of different trees as part of their sort of playing pieces that they put on the board, and they're these really beautiful, colorful 3D cardboard models, and as the game goes on it kind of creates like a whole forest kind of in front of you on the table, all in 3D, beautiful colors, and it just really looks really, really nice and just creates a really lovely zen type feeling when you're playing it. And the beer that I'm going to match with that one, I was thinking of all the different choices, obviously, in a game about photosynthesis and sunlight, you're obviously not going to go for one of the darker ales, so we're sort of up at the lighter end, so you know, up towards your sort of lighter end. So I've gone for a good IPA, and then you've got to sort of think what sort of fits with that whole sort of wood theme, trees in the wood. And so I've picked a beer from Wychwood Brewery, which is a British brewery based sort of in Oxfordshire. And they make Hobgoblin, which is a world famous beer. So even our listeners in America will probably have heard of, if not tried, a Hobgoblin. So Wychwood Brewery is the home and the producers of Hobgoblin. And I've picked, interestingly, I picked the beer that this beer and this game came out almost exactly the same time. So it's the newest one of the Hobgoblin group, and it's the Wychwood Brewery Hobgoblin IPA. So as everyone knows, the IPA stands for the India Pale Ale. And it's a really nice light ale, and one of the great things about it is it's got a really good blend of hops. You sometimes find with some ales that you get, so you essentially have your hops coming from sort of North America, and then you've also got a lot of hops that sort of come over from Europe as well. And North American hops tend to be much, much stronger, and they create a very dominant kind of flavor, and sometimes that can be a little bit too much. So you kind of want that sort of slight sort of citrusy bitter edge that you can get from the sort of American hops, but you want to sort of, you don't want to go over the top with it so it just dominates the flavor of the whole beer. And this one combines both British and American hops to give you a light, citrusy, refreshing ale from Wychwood Brewery, which of course fits the theme of new growth, spring, and photosynthesis beautifully. And so that is my ultimate perfect partner this episode, and it is Photosynthesis. Can't say that word. Photosynthesis and Wychwood Brewery's new Hobgoblin IPA. and I recommend people give it a try. Light and refreshing without being over dominant on the hops.
Awesome.
Yes, and if anybody has a particular board game that they would like me to come up with a perfect partner for, please drop us a line. You can contact us on the website. You can contact us on Twitter, which is at Devon Dice UK, or me on Twitter, which is at the underscore brewery. Brewery tour, even at the underscore brewery tour, or you can catch us on our Board Game Geeks guild as well, which is Devon Dice.
I've got one for you.
Yeah,
Monopoly.
I think I'll go nicely with a lager.
Alright. Awesome. Right, news. So, here's the headlines in the news that I've picked out so far. Mansions of Madness, Mother's Embrace, coming to stream? Steam only PC early next year. Megaland from Red Raven Games to be only sold at Target, US.
That is disappointing. Although we'll get it anyway, won't we?
I think
I saw it, I think they were saying only in the US it's only sold at Target, but everywhere else it'll be fine.
Kickstarter scandal. Singapore and Malaysian Borders, that's the name of the company, has run off with thousands of pounds from, or thousands of something, from Kickstarter backers hoping to save money on group buys using them. Another classic being reprinted by Z-Man Games, Taj Mahal. Oh, crying out loud. Taj Mahal.
Yeah, another Rainer Knitza classic.
And Furia Dracula 4th edition announced by WizKids.
That was only a matter of time, wasn't it, after Fantasy lost their
everyone went panic mode going, oh no, we can't
quick spend £10,000 buying a copy.
I must admit I did do that.
Of course you did.
No, I done it with 2nd edition.
Oh, did you?
When they thought they're never going to bring it out, a year later they brought out 3rd edition, you buggers. I think I spent about £80 on it.
Oh no, Joel.
And then I sold it for about 40 afterwards, I think.
Yeah. Oh, on a similar sort of theme to that as well, good for the news is that Project Elite, the Artipia Games release that was never going to be released ever again because there was people really rude online and kind of really just made the designer essentially what sounds like drop into a really nasty bout of depression. And he said, I'm not going near this game ever again. I'm never touching it. And they weren't nasty about the game. The game is really quite a clever game. They were nasty about the miniatures that came with it. Apparently, Room on the Street has it. I saw that Rado had put something on his Twitter and one of his videos saying that he'd got news from the inside that they are bringing out a new print of that. And I spent a lot of money getting the last lot of those. But in fact, I didn't spend as much as I could have.
No,
I got it, and literally it was within 2 days of it arriving from my eBay. I bought it from eBay, and within 2 days of it arriving was when the announcement came out, this is games never getting reprinted, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, phew, I got that first.
That's when the prices rocketed.
Yes, exactly. So, I debated almost insta-reselling it, but nah, my games are for me.
So yeah, I think Christoph says, it looks like Z-Man Games is now the classic line for Asmodee International for releasing all the classic out-of-print games. Especially remakes, from Rainer Knizia.
He's got some absolute corkers there, Rainer. Is it Rainer or Rainer?
Rainer, something like that.
I never know which one it's supposed to be. Sorry,
so yeah, like you said, Rainer. Megaland, they have said it's just with Target. I reckon it'd be a timed release. It will come out everywhere probably a year later.
Yeah.
Because they do this quite a lot in America. They get certain games in. They've done it with like Code Names After Dark and
Special Journey. Edition of Code. That was it. Code Names After Dark, the ones with like the really raunchy words.
Yeah. So it will come out. So there's nothing to fear from that, really. I have Mac, so I can't play this PC game, which is sad, makes me sad. As well as it's also, Psy is also coming out on beta testing for PC only on Steam. So again, I can't do that. So sucks when you have a really good computer and they don't put games on it. So, and I say that because I've had this now for nearly 3 years and it still works a treat. But if I get a PC, it'd be broken in 6 months.
Needs updates. Need to buy a new Windows update.
So I'm not paying another 100 quid just to update my software. So
why are you not doing this for free? I don't understand.
Well, yeah, Matt just send me free updates all the time. Here's a new update. It does all this stuff. Wow. Yeah. This is amazing. Yeah, yeah.
It also the older your device, the more it slows down the process deliberately with programming to quote save the battery.
Still not happening with my device. It's fine. And Fury of Dracula 4th edition, the cool thing with this, because it's WizKids, the miniatures will be pre-painted. Where
nice.
The others are all kind of just the plastic. That's quite cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that appeals to me as someone who can't paint.
I might look at this, the 4th edition.
You've already got the second edition.
No, sold it. Didn't get the third one. So I might look at this 4th edition, but I don't know. Fury of Dracula didn't really do it for me.
Hidden movement game.
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's fine.
The best hidden movement game I've ever played was Nuns on the Run.
All right.
It's the best for the simple fact that the funnest part of hidden movement games is being the person who's hidden.
Right.
And moving around, isn't it? Yeah, that's the best part. But obviously, there's only one person. Everyone else is hunting them down.
Mm-hmm.
But in Nuns on the Run, everyone is a hidden person apart from the person who controls the kind of head nuns who are patrolling, trying to catch the. I think you're all student nuns trying to sneak out of your dormitories at night. But the head nuns are patrolling around the corridors. And so everybody has got hidden movement except for the one person who's got the open movement, who's playing the head nuns.
Yeah.
And so that means that the most people get to be having the most fun at any one time. And that's why it works so well. And it was just quite funny.
That's like, it's kind of similar to the one that I got at Kickstarter. Well, it's not on the way to me, actually, it's still being made. Alone, where it takes that, where like it's like a dungeon crawl, but instead of just one guy being a dungeon master and he's doing all the monsters and things like that, it's one guy on his own in this kind of space station kind of thing. And the other people are the enemy plotting against this guy of how quickly they can kill him kind of thing.
And I
just thought, that's really cool. So I really can't wait for that to come along. And it's like, you're just sat there and the tension's going to be high because you can see them. They're going to have this massive screen in front of them and they're going to be plotting out what they're going to do kind of thing, how to make this guy's life a nightmare. And you're just going to be like going, I don't know what to do. And then also, as you walk through the space station, another cool thing is the tiles that you've left behind disappear. So you've got to remember where you've, like, what it was laid out before. So I'm looking forward to that come. I think they're still making a damn thing.
That'll be good. I look forward to playing that.
But yeah, so that's kind of, it turns it on its head. But yeah. Yeah. And then the Kickstarter scandal. This is basically, Borders was a company set up to date mass orders of Kickstarter games that would usually be very expensive to ship to Asia due to shipping costs and VAT taxes and things like that. So they set this up, said, right, give us your money, we'll make the order and then we'll send it to you when it gets delivered. Basically, they've done that with lots of Kickstarters and then they've just disappeared off the face of the earth. And not only are backers out of pocket, there's actually some Kickstarter companies that have actually sent the produce to this company somewhere and not been paid for it. So Yes.
Somebody's mugging someone off.
Someone's been mugged off. Quite a lot of people have been mugged off.
They are, yeah.
So, but then that sort of thing happens. I mean, I put a risk in with a group buy on a Facebook group for a game, and I'm now just relying on this person when he gets the games in to send it to me.
Yeah.
I'm pretty confident, 99.999% sure it's going to be fine, kind of thing.
But there's that little edge. Will you get it?
It's just a little thing. But I'm not that worried about this because it was a massive... It started off with, like, shall we get a group buy? And there was like 8 of us. And then it spiraled out to there was probably about 60 of us all wanted to like get on this group buy. It's like, we need to divide this out into sections, right? Someone take this area, someone take that area, kind of thing. So it's gone off like that. So it's been micromanaged quite well. So that's the news. Not really much happening. I don't know. And then Kickstarters. Sorry. Fireball Islands is still doing very well.
Fireball Island. And also, I saw a video of a full playthrough the other day.
Yeah, so
it looks significantly more dexterity-based than I had pictured.
Yeah.
And I do love a dexterity game.
Oh, there's tons of action going on in that. What I love, I don't know if you've seen the updates, with the new sleeves they designed.
Yeah, that was quite cool.
The best sleeve idea I've ever seen.
Yeah, they're kind of, it's clever.
So go along and check that out on their site. Up to 1.8 million. I reckon they're gonna smash 2 million. Probably maybe 3. Boom. Maybe. But we'll see. Dinosaur Island has ended and raised £2 million. $2 million.
And significant difference as well.
And we got the Pandasaurus meeple.
I don't know why. What's that? I want genuine dinosaurs in my park. I mean, if you fools want to play around pretending you've got a dinosaur park, then it's up to you with your fake dinosaurs. But my park is going to be full of genuine, real dinosaurs. So,
apparently everyone wanted a Pandasaurus meeple to go in their park along with the Pandasaurus recipe.
Yeah.
But there was some really good stretch goals.
There were some really good stretch goals there.
Yeah.
Like the whole little like baby dinosaurs with like the baby dinosaur petting zoo and stuff like that. It looked pretty cool. And then all the water dinosaurs, obviously, because it was the Kickstarter for the water dinosaurs.
And it just felt like towards the end, it's like, there's a meeple for this thing that you might never use. Great. We'll take it. Whatever.
Yeah.
We're really running out of ideas. Here's another meeple of this shape.
I signed on about 1.5 million ago, so there wasn't all this stuff, and I was still happy with it.
So, that's great news. And if you think you missed out, fear not, you can go back in on the Kickstarter and still get your copies if you missed out.
Does that still come in all the Kickstarter stuff?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yes. So, Kickstarter looks like it's now got the second printing of everything being released. Notably, Factory, Funner and Bigger and Habitats 3rd Edition. It's all from the same company. It's all one Kickstarter. City of Kings, Ancient Allies and Fadoran Gardens.
Mm.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Fadoran Gardens, which City Gins was out last year, and it's just been delivered to backers, and they've re-released it again with the expansion. Kitchen Rust, Piece of Cake, again, that released last year, released at Essen. Yeah,
we played that at Essen, didn't we?
Yeah. So you can get this again with all the extras and all the things. And then also Nothing Personal Revised Edition. I really like to talk about this.
Do it. I've got
Nothing
Steamrolled Personal. Over my Kitchen Rush chat. But.
Okay. I've got my Nothing Personal from the first edition. I think I got sent it, actually. But anyway.
Have we played it?
No, you haven't played it.
Ah, you've been hiding it from me.
I don't even think Mike's played it. I don't think it was there. But we played it a few times. A good game. Really cutthroat. It's really nasty. You've got to go into that game knowing that your friend will stab you in the back. Yeah. You will be stabbed in the back, left, right, and centre. And It's great. This is a revised system where it's, they said they've streamlined a 3-hour game down to 60 minutes. Okay. But they're also not letting up any details whether us first edition people can get these rules and do this to our game. Okay, that's one thing, which is a shame. The other thing is, do you know who designed this game?
Do I know?
Yeah.
Was it Rainer Knizia?
No.
Well, that's always a good bet. But that's a tip to anyone, by the way. If you ever get asked in a board game quiz, who designed this game, say Rainer Knizia, because he's by far done the most.
He's the king of board game media.
The king of board game media?
Yeah.
Oh, Jamie Stiegmeier.
No, media.
Oh, Tom Vassell.
Yep.
Tom Vassell made this game.
Yep, with Steve Avery. Do you know whose name's on the front of this box for the second printing?
Tom Vassell.
No, Steve Avery.
Steve Avery.
They so seem Vassell's to have kicked out Tom Vassell. Now, Steve Avery's been on the Geek saying, oh no, Tom's like dropped it all. He wants to continue, like, is too involved with Dice Tower and things like that. And I think there's a few little shenanigans here. One, because I don't like Game Salute, even though they're now under Sterling Games. And I think they basically said, like, we're going to reprint this.
Mm.
Give us the rights. We'll put your name in the rule book. But, and like, I think Tom would have tried to put up a fight, but I think they've got him over a barrel, probably with contract ties and things like that. And it was just like, the best you're going to get is your name saying that you were the original designer. And I just think it stinks.
Mm. Interesting.
So, yeah. And it makes me wonder whether his cards and all his buddy cards are being removed from the game as well. So, because I didn't see any of that in the Kickstarter.
Yeah. Oh, so. I can picture this card now. I can picture the cards with the Dice Tower guys on. Is it like quite cartoony?
Yes.
Yeah, I can picture the game now. Yeah.
He uses the card as his picture as the for his Miami Dice.
Yeah.
So, because I was looking through it and I was like, there's no mention of Tom Vassell. And then there was like, I was looking on the front box. I was like, well, it's only got Steve Avery on there. Oh, right. Let's go and see if there's a fight over on Kicks on Board Game Geek. And like,
yeah, I love spotting things that mean that there's going to be a fight somewhere. That's why it's always good.
And like, good. Steve Avery's come on and said, oh, Tom Vassell doesn't want to do anything. He's giving the rights over and blah, blah, blah. And one guy's gone, well, I would like to hear this from Tom Vassell himself, because he did say he was still like looking into designing games and that and things like that.
It might be purely genuine. I mean, you know, if you're somebody who enjoys playing games, then designing games is significantly, it's a significantly different kind of enjoyment that you get out of it, isn't it? So he may well have just thought, do you know what, I can't be, because it takes a lot of effort, a lot of work to put into design a board game. So he may well just be like, oh, do you know what, I'm really not interested in putting more time and effort into this at the moment. I'm having fun with just playing and reviewing games and all the other great content that they make on the Dice Tower, I guess.
Well, yeah, apparently he's still working on a game, but I don't know. Thing is, I don't know if this game would fit 60 minutes,
because
this game was good as it was. Okay, it took like 2-3 hours to play, but you had fun with all the kind of banter and trying to make alliances with people, and you can just ditch them whenever you want or not make deals and not go through with it and really be nasty and things like that. But like, streaming it down to 60 minutes doesn't sound like there's enough time to do all that. Just feels like, yeah, right, rush through, done. It's like, okay. Yeah. So I don't know if it suits it. Maybe that was a problem. Maybe Tom Vassell said, no, I don't want it. It doesn't need streamlining down to that short a time.
Yeah.
And then they said, well, we're doing it anyway. Give us the rights or we'll just take them away from you. So that's what some people come across like that on Board Game Geek. That's what I was reading into. And I was like,
Yeah, well, possibly. Like, people do always try and make kind of controversy, don't they? People
yeah, I love a bit of controversy. Yeah. Anyway, so that's so I spotted that. Sucks, not backing it, because my mate Tom's not on there.
He knows you so well.
Yeah. Anyway, Kitchen Rush, what do you want to say?
No, I was just going to say we played at Essen, which is it's quite an interesting sort of real-time game. We're making sort of recipes, but each action you do, your action pieces are little sand timers. I think we talk about it more on the Essen episode, don't we?
A little bit.
Yeah, we definitely talk about it. But your sort of action markers are sand timers. So when you place them, you turn the sand timer over, and you can't move them again until the sand timer's gone all the way through. And there's all of you kind of running around the kitchen, obviously, always bumping into each other, trying to fight over the stoves or fight over the store cupboard or the resources. And it's quite fun, I thought.
I think it's quite thematic in a way. You're trying to do jobs, and you're like, oh, I've got to do this. Yeah. It's taking too long to do, and then I need to do this. And
yeah, customers are waiting.
Yeah, customers waiting, things like that. So, yeah, I thought it was quite thematic in that sense. Funny thing is, at Essen, I brought the promo pack that was for the Kickstarter. I never bought the game because I saw Meeple's Corner. It was like half the price when he had the pre-orders up. So I was
I remember you saying that, pick
it up when it comes in Meeple's Corner. Still came in at the same price as Essen. I was like, god damn, I should have picked it up there. And I still haven't picked up a copy yet because I'm just like, I'm going to wait for it cheaper to come out.
That's strange, because normally on Meeple's Corner, if you pre-order it at a price, he doesn't increase the cost.
He does. It does change. It fluctuates. Depends what he comes in. He puts it, I think he estimates.
Okay.
Like, he does get a price from it, but they said, even they say from the the distributors, that it could fluctuate in prices, are not guaranteed kind of thing. So when you pre-order, you don't pay for anything.
Yeah, that's true.
Because
he says it
could change in price by the time you get it.
Okay, fair enough.
So, but I think it went up in cost because there was only so many units left after Essen. Like they said on this Kickstarter, that they basically sold out practically. Yeah. They had a few bits left off, which they sent off. Now they need to do another printing of it. So here's a good opportunity to make more money.
What happened to Meeple Circus.
Mm.
Except it didn't go up in price. I think it went down.
Anyway. And last one I want to talk about is Growl. Now, this caught my eye because everyone seemed to be backing it. Like, I follow quite a few creators that have done Kickstarters, so I follow what they do, and they all seem to be backing this. So I went ahead and looked at it, and I was like, it's not bad. It's $22, free shipping by the looks of it. Okay, I put it down. So I stuck my down, and I was on an early pledge as well, day one backer, so it was a little bit cheaper. So I stuck my pledge in there, and then I went back later to watch a video when I had time. And it's bloody basically werewolf game, where it's a social game where you're passing around cards, and if you get too many bites in your hand, then you're dead or a werewolf or like that. And just like, oh great,
you're not a fan of social games, are you?
It has the most aggressive marketing employees I've seen in a Kickstarter so far. Not only, as soon as I backed it, or later on when I backed it, I get a message from the creator basically saying, my name is Joey, community manager, want to thank you for being an early backer. We want to let you know that we have a referral program where you can earn free shipping at something, blah, blah, blah. If you're interested, enter your Kickstarter username and email associated with the Kickstarter. We don't save your info. We just use it for track rewards. Then share this unique URL code with your friends and family. So basically, how many people back the project from using your code, you will get free shipping. And if more do it, you'll get more goodies from it. So they're making you do all the legwork to get this backed and funded and more money in their pocket. And I was just like, this pisses me off. You're forcing me, kind of forcing me to like promote your game. So you get more money so I can earn rewards off of it. Which is fair enough if people like doing that. But I don't want to be spammed by all my friends that do Kickstarter as well. Back this through me, back that through me, blah, 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 earn this.
Yeah.
I felt like reporting him as spam. And then you look through it all, and all the updates that they've done so far is like, oh, well, if you do this, remember our incentive ward scheme and blah, blah, blah. It's like, I don't want to know about the incentive ward. I want to know what, how much you've done and what extra goodies you're going to give it for it. So yes, if you like Werewolf, you might like Growl. It's already funded. They don't really need any of your money for a ripoff of Werewolf. But yeah, you get a furry bag.
Everyone likes a furry bag.
Everyone
likes
a furry
bag. So did you cancel your pledge then?
I will be cancelling it in a minute.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to keep it on there just to remind me of this vow, foul thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just...
Yeah.
You see some things on Kickstarter and people try stuff. And...
Yeah.
This is just, I just thought it was over the top. As soon as I backed it, oh, hi there, I'm so-and-so. Right, if you do all this legwork for us, then we'll give you free shipping. How about that for a deal? And it's like, some people will just lap that up and say, yeah, I could do this kind of thing. Oh, and the worst thing was, they had a pledge level, yeah?
Yeah.
First 500 backers get the game for free.
Get the game for free?
Yes.
Wow. Weird.
I've never seen that before.
No. Were you in the first 500?
No, I was not. I would be keeping my pledge. But then I probably would have had to do legwork for it.
Yeah. It's There's only probably... free if you get another 20,000 people to sign up under your URL.
There was probably something like...
God, it's like worse than those like ridiculous marketing things they sell you. Like, oh, you can get a free iPhone.
Yeah.
Just if you like do 50,000 surveys, give us... Yeah, like and share. And
tag your mates in this.
Yeah, and then there's no iPhone.
No. I remember those first coming around and it's like going to my mate, oh, how did you do that? Because he's come like, I've won of iPhone. And I was like, how did you do that? He goes, I haven't. It's a scam.
Yeah.
Just ignore it. I was like, oh. Be
mugged.
Oh, right. So the first, the ones that did back it, it is basic package. They don't get any stretch goals. Full zone version without box or tokens. Wow, this is like.
that's not a game then, is it? What is that? Wait, you don't get a box, only the tokens.
What are they get? They're just getting a deck of cards. No stretch goals, all exclusives. I will charge only basic shipping and subtract your dollar from it. Because you have to back at a dollar.
Yeah.
Enjoy the game for free and please tell others about it. Who's going to frigging want that? Well, actually, it's a free game, isn't it? Except for you're paying shipping. So for someone in the UK, it's still going to cost you £25. I don't know.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Safe to say, you're going to get rid of your pledge from this one.
Yeah. It feels like I've been a right negative Nancy on this show.
It does. But I was thinking that I sounded quite negative last one. So a couple of people commented to me that I sounded really quite ranty. So I've tried to be a lot more positive this one. I'm a ranty person, but don't worry, I'm not really cross.
Hi, yeah, just want to jump in here, and the day after we finished recording, Exploriana, that push-up board game that Michael wrote us the lovely reviewer before, is now on Kickstarter. You can go there and pick up a copy or back a copy for £30, plus £4 shipping to the UK, and have your own experience of exploring the world in the 1920s. Go along and support UK designers and publishers, and information's in the show notes. Let's get back to the podcast.
What have you got to say, Lewis?
Yeah, well, I think we're sort of coming to the end now. I think that's just about everything. Unfortunately, big shout out to Nick Shaw, who on BGG Guild has been getting involved in some good debates and some good chats. And one of the things we were going to chat about is the current cost of board games. And I did promise him that I was going to put together a really I think quite comprehensive and strong argument that actually I think board games are significantly underpriced at the moment. But unfortunately, we've run out of time, so I shall put that one in the next next episode. And if you guys would like to get involved in the discussion and debate, you can head over to our Board Game Geek Guild, which is Devon Dice, or you can tweet us. Or leave a comment on our website. And that's hopefully you can all shout at me next time when I come up with the answer as to why board games should be more expensive.
Awesome. So, yeah, so let's close this out. Thank you for listening. Tune in for the next show next month. Plus, don't miss our UK Games Expo preview show, will be coming in the middle of next month, May time.
Mm-hmm.
It's that time. It's getting exciting. Big thanks to Meeple's Corner for sponsoring the show. Check the show notes for details of where you can find us on the Facebook page and Twitter accounts. Also, don't forget our guild, which is number so-and-so, I can't remember, where you can chat to us about board games and anything else related or unrelated. My name has been Joel Wright, the host and editor of this show. I have been joined tonight by...
I've been Lewis, and you can now find me on Twitter at @_brewerytour. Come and be my friend, follower. Come be my follower, because I don't have many, apart from people who want me to pay them to look at them naked.
And this has been Devon Dice Podcast. And remember, it's your turn.
Boom. Looks good. I think that's quite a good episode.
Yeah.
I feel like that went quite well.
I think I do better when I rant.
Mm-hmm. It's much easier to sound more animated and to be more animated when you're ranting about something, really passionate about something.
Mm-hmm. I think it's beer.
Beer always helps loosen the tongue.
It does a bit.
Yeah. You should have a Hobgoblin IPA and a...
Trouble is, I was just sat there, I was thinking, I'm going to rant on these two games, and it was at the Meeple's Corner day. I'm really going to have to big out. It was a good day, apart from this. I was just like, I want to really rant on them. And I was like, oh, right, what can I do?
I love a good board game rant.